Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indian Railway Finance Corporation Q3 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by DAM Capital Advisors Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pritesh Bumb of DAM Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Chris. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of DAM Capital, I would like to welcome you to the conference call of Indian Railway Finance Corporation. This afternoon we have with us Mr. Amitabh Banerjee, CMD, IRFC, Director Shelly Verma, and other team members of the management. I would like to now hand over the call to the CMD for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good afternoon to all. Now, I'll just go through the presentation, slide by slide. Going to the first slide, if you may see, that shows the key strengths of our organization, Indian Railway Finance Corporation, which happens to be the dedicated market borrowing arm of Indian Railways. Last year, in FY21, we financed 67% of the total capital outlay, with an annual disbursement of 104,300 crore. That was the highest ever disbursement since our inception in 1986, in the last 35 years. This was the highest disbursement in the last financial year. The AUM has grown at 38.33% in the nine-month ended December 2021, as against the corresponding period in the last year. The total AUM stands at 4.02 lakh crore as on 31st of December 2021. It's a lowest cost plus business model that IRFC operates on, and we have got a strategic relationship with the Ministry of Railways, which enables us to maintain a very low risk profile with a nil NPA. We have never had any NPA in our books in the last 35 years since our inception. It's a cost plus standard lease agreement that we enter into with MOR. We enter into a financial lease agreement every year with Ministry of Railways, both for the rolling stock disbursement as well as for disbursement towards the project assets. There has been a consistent spread on the cost aspect while pricing our lease rental, which stands at about 40 basis points over the weighted average cost in case of rolling stock and 35 basis points in case of project assets. IRFC is characterized by a very competitive cost of borrowing. We have got a diversified portfolio of borrowing instruments, and we are rated at par with the sovereign as far as the offshore bond issuances are concerned or as far as the offshore loans are concerned. We are rated at par with the sovereign by all the three, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch. In the domestic market, we get the highest credit rating by all the three agencies like CARE, ICRA, and CRISIL. There's a strong asset liability management which is in place in the organization. IRFC happens to be a non-banking finance company, so therefore, asset liability ALM is the core of our business model, and we borrow on a long-term basis in such a way that it dovetails with the tenor and the terms. They coincide, and they are dovetailed with the tenor of the loans that we are giving to Indian Railways. The question of any kind of a mismatch in asset liability is avoided. Ministry of Railways is another important factor towards this ALM is that there is a particular covenant in the agreement that we enter into with Ministry of Railways on a yearly basis, that one of the covenants says that just in the unlikely event of IRFC failing to repay the loans in on the scheduled date, both in terms of repayment of the principal as well as servicing of interest, then Ministry of Railways will pitch in with the requisite liquidity well in advance so that IRFC does not plan to default on the payment date. Although in the last so many years, IRFC has never had that occasion of invoking this particular clause and forcing Indian Railways or Minister of Railways to provide for any shortfall at all, if any. But we have never had that occasion. But theoretically, this is a good comfort for the investor community. There has been a consistent financial performance that IRFC has been giving out over a period of time, with the profit growing at 56.71% on a Q3 to Q3 basis. So in the quarter ended December 21, the profit grew by 56.71% compared to the profit in the corresponding period of the last financial year. Revenue from operations also grew by 27% on a Q3 to Q3 basis. Our organization is characterized by very low overheads of hardly about 0.14% of the total turnover. There's a very healthy return, good return ratios are there at return on asset at 1.45% and return on equity at 15.62% for the third quarter on an annualized basis. As we have already mentioned earlier, we are a nil tax paying company as of now, and we get a lot of regulatory exemptions from RBI and other oversight agencies because IRFC almost is like treated as a quasi-government entity. We are exempt from the asset classification norms, provisioning norms, and exposure norms of RBI. And we are now not required to pay any MAT, and because of good amount of unabsorbed depreciation balance in our books, we are taxable income falls to below nil. The next slide shows the strategic role that that IRFC has been playing in financing the growth of Indian Railways. As far as the Indian Railways, coverage of Indian Railways is concerned, it caters to only 50 route kilometer per million population as against 592 in Russia or 464 in USA or 437 in France. So we have got a long way to go as far as infrastructure building is concerned and as far as the opening up the railway sector to the people at large is concerned. And the MOR's Minister of Railways increasing dependence on IRFC is vouchsafed by the fact that over the years, say from FY18, when we used to only finance 36% of the total capex requirement of Minister of Railways, we have grown to 67.3% to end of the last financial year. We play a very strategic role in financing the growth of Indian Railways, in as much as the assets under management has grown from 1.5 lakh crore in 2017-18 to 4.02 lakh crore to end of Q3 of the current financial year. The disbursements also has grown in an exponential manner. From 36,722 crore in FY18, it has gone to 1,04,369 crores to end of FY21. And to end of Q3 in the current financial year, it has logged about 43,745 crore. If you look at the AUM breakup on the right-hand side of the graph, it shows that about 98% of the total AUM is the loan that we have given to Minister of Railways by way of financial leasing, out of which 54% is accounted for by the project asset financing and the rest 44% is on account of rolling stock financing, and the 2% of the AUM is accounted for by the loan that we are giving to RVNL and the one-time loan that we are given to IRCON. This has already been cited earlier in the first slide. There has been an even spread that we charge on the weighted average cost of funding in our lease rental that we charge from Minister of Railways at 40 bps above the WACC in case of rolling stock and 35 bps in case of project assets. It has been quite consistent over the last 3-4 years. And we are raising funds at the lowest possible cost amongst the various term lending institutions in India. and this directly benefits the Indian Railways in terms of saving in their financial costs. And this goes a long way towards making the project assets and the rolling stock assets viable. Going to the next slide. If you look at the borrowing mix of IRFC, the major proportion is through the domestic bonds, which accounts for 46% of our total borrowing portfolio. This includes the 54EC capital gains tax bonds also, and followed by rupee term loans at 31%. ECB happens to, happens to occupy about 15% of the total borrowing portfolio. And the borrowing mix as on 31st of December 2020, the corresponding period of the last financial year, you would see that the ECB portion was 10% as against 15% to end of Q3 this year. And the domestic bonds used to be much more by way of percentage of the total borrowing mix at 59%. Which has come down to 46%, and this particular space has been taken up by more of rupee term loans because of getting better terms as far as the RTL portfolio is concerned from IRFC standpoint. So we are getting the AAA rating from all the domestic rating agencies, CRISIL, ICRA and CARE, AAA in case of long tenor papers, and A1 plus in case of short tenor papers. Moody's, S&P and Fitch and JCRA, they all rate us at par with the sovereign with stable outlook. IRFC has been crediting out a consistent financial performance over the years with net interest income up to Q3 at 4,654 crores as against 4,597 crores during the corresponding period last year. The operating expenses is at only 0.11% of the total turnover up to Q3 of FY 2022. The return ratios are pretty healthy at 15.62% as far as the ROE is concerned, and on an annualized basis, and return on assets is at 1.45%. Capital adequacy ratio is at 466% to end of Q3 2022, and the net gearing ratio now stands at 9.3 to end of December. The net interest margin stands at 1.62%, which has grown from 1.45% to end of March 2021. The other key ratios are the net gearing ratio, as I said earlier, is 9.34x, and earning per share to end of December is 3.52 rupees, and return on equity is 15.62%. Other ratios I've already dealt with. The snapshot of the key financials that is under the revenue from operations is at 14,367 crores for the 9-month period of the current financial year, as against 11,315 crores to end of 31st December 2020. So year on year, there's a growth of 27% in the revenue from operations. And the bottom line has grown from 2,933 crores in the corresponding period of the last financial year to Q3 of this financial year. It has gone up to 4,597 crores. So profit after tax has grown by a whopping 57%. I think that brings us to the end of the presentation. Our balance sheet size has also grown from 3,08,000 crores to end of December of FY21 to 4,31,000 crores to end of Q3 2022. So, and in September FY22, it was 4,08,000 crores. So, on a quarterly basis, it has increased from 4.08 lakh crores to 4.31 lakh crore. So that is the sequential growth that we have had in the last quarter. Yeah, I'm open to questions, if any. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and then one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and then two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking the question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait a moment for the question queue to assemble. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Pritesh, while we wait for any other parties to join the queue, would you like to ask some questions?
Hello?
Yes, please.
Sir, Pritesh here from DAM Capital. Just one or two questions before some more come up. Sir, in the mix of borrowing, you just mentioned that term loans has increased over 31%. Can you just indicate what will be the tenure of this incremental raising? In terms of how much year, or is it short term, long term, how is it?
Yeah, it's all long term loans with a 15-year tenor.
So this will be primarily from banks, right?
Primarily from banks, both from PSBs as well as corporate, private corporate banks.
Right. And sir, at what rate are we contacting these loans?
No, these are at very competitive rates as compared to other financial institutions. We are getting at very, very competitive rates. I would not be able to divulge the details right now. That you can get the information offline. But okay. It is at very, very competitive rates. And our weighted average cost of funding has also decreased. Has also been decreasing over the years, and that is, this fact is borne out by this fact that the WACC has been going down over the years.
Sure, but do you see the NIM sustaining? I mean, any renewal in terms of contract basis from the railway, we can see that if they decreased, their pricing for us, will it see that NIMs may move down, or can it sustain at these levels of about 165 basis points?
No, as far as the NIM is concerned, yes, it would have this kind of an organic growth that we are having right now, in future also, and the likelihood of the margin or the markup over the cost. The likelihood of that coming down in times to come is practically ruled out.
Sure. And would you like to also indicate what mix will generally we have in the borrowing side? Right now we've seen a little bit, as you said, KB, you went with for better terms with the banks. How do you see the mix shaping up as rates rise going ahead?
Yeah, you mean the borrowing mix.
Yes.
The borrowing mix. Yeah, we have to see how it pans out in the next financial year. But as we talk now, you would be aware of the fact that the bond market is stiffening a bit, and there's going to be a lot of government borrowings in the next financial year also. So it all depends on how the market pans out, and accordingly we will take a call on how much to raise money through issuance of bonds and how much to do it through RTLs, to be term loans from the financial institutions or through the offshore window, that is either the offshore bonds under 144A or REGS format or the syndicated loans from overseas market. It all depends, at that point of time, how the market pans out. That we will definitely go for the lowest yield kind of a lowest cost borrowing mix. So this year, since the bond market was a bit hard, so therefore there was enough liquidity in the market in the financial market, so we took advantage of the lower cost as far as the rupee term loans from banks and financial institutions were concerned.
Sure. So there is no cap internal basis where we will try to end up having it in terms of, because it's important for you. You said that ALM is very important. So just wanted to check on basis of that.
No, there's no such cap, number one. And definitely, ALM is at the top, is our topmost priority. And that would not be really hampered, or that would not be really impacted by any of these variables. So we do take into account ALM whenever we go for borrowings.
Got it. Got it. Sir, the second question was on the gearing ratio. We've seen that it is sustainably moving up, and indirectly, it has also improved the ROEs towards 15%. Now, what is your view on gearing ratios now, sir? Do we see any further increase in the gearing ratio beyond 10, or do we see our gearing ratio will move down, which also slightly bring down our ROEs? What's your view on that, sir?
You see, as far as I've already, I've mentioned this in my previous investor calls also, we are okay with going beyond 10 also if the situation so arises, number one. And number two is that going forward, yes, we would like to, I mean, there is no such issue as far as the gearing is concerned. We are at 9.3 right now. And this year, we don't need to raise any fresh capital as far as our further disbursements to Ministry of Railways is concerned. With the given gearing ratio, we'll be able to manage within 10 as far as this financial year is concerned. And the next financial year, we will take a call. But definitely, we can go beyond 10. There is no resistance from our side, nor from any other, nor from the ministry side, nor from any other oversight agency side. So we don't feel any kind of a resistance to that.
Sure. Last question from my side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, last question from my side. In the opening remarks, you mentioned that generally every year the Indian Railway contract is renewed. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, every year?
The railway contract for rolling stock is renewed, is what I heard. Is that correct?
No, I could not get your question. I mean, can you just, they are renewing.
So you had a comment in the opening remarks about every year renewal from.
Oh, yeah. No. You see, that is the business model we have.
Yeah.
That every year, we enter into a lease agreement, fresh lease agreement with Ministry of Railways for the incremental disbursement that we are giving to Ministry of Railways in that particular year. So, therefore, what happens is, in a particular year, say we are giving 104,000 crores, say, in FY 2021. So there is a fresh lease agreement for that particular portion of the amount that we have given to Indian Railways. In the last year, it was about 71,000 crores. So every year, whatever loan we are disbursing, we have a fresh lease agreement for that particular amount.
Sure. And when is this period when this visibility starts? I mean, is it
After the expiry of the financial year.
So basically after March end, we'll
Yes.
go and see for the visibility of next year, FY 22.
Yes.
Sure. Thank you, sir. That answers my question. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from Nikhil Garg of Aviva. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. I have a couple of questions. First of all, sir, what is the disbursement target for FY 2022? And if there is any number that you are thinking of FY 2023? And another question is, how much borrowing is left from the capital markets for FY 2022, and what is the plan for FY 2023?
You see, as far as the next year's target is concerned, there has already been, it was noted in the budget that was announced on 1st of February. It's about 68,000 crores, the initial target, the budget estimate.
Okay.
And what is your next question?
So how much is the borrowing from the capital markets left for FY 2022, and what are your plans for FY 2023?
Well, borrowings would be, I mean, we have now got a revised target of 60, Ojha, what is the revised target? It's 65,000 crores.
For FY?
FY 2022.
No, sir, how much will be from the bond market and.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you.
You see, so we have already, I think, disbursed about 44,000 crores to end of December. So in the Q3, about 20,000 crores more would be required.
So, sir, how much will you borrow it from bonds? Is there any number?
No, I mean, that all depends. The point is that it all depends that when we go for raising finance, at that point of time, which is more economical, whether the bond market, gives better returns or better returns in the sense that it gives me more yield, or the loan market. So that it will not be possible to give a finite number to that. But
okay.
Rough short formula, if you want, I mean, it will be more tilted towards raising money from the loan component than the bond component, simply because the bond market has really stiffened over a couple of months, and will not like to go for further issuance of bonds. I mean, as it stands now, yes.
I think term loans comes with a caveat of
exposure.
The level of rate changes every year in every 3 years, no, in term loans if you borrow it from bank.
Yes, it's reset every
reset
everything we factor in. I mean, it's not as if we just take the nominal rate. Everything is factored in, we know that, and we factor in that thing also. In case of bonds, yes, the rates are fixed. But taking all of that into account, we take the final call on whether to go for bonds and how much to go for bonds. Of course, I mean, it's not exactly whether, I mean, either or. You go for, I mean, it's a mix. I mean, it's a diversified mix. So sometimes the mix is tilted in favor of rupee term loans or the syndicated loans from the overseas market. And sometimes it is tilted in favor of the offshore bond issuances or the domestic bond issuances. Like recently, we had gone for $500 million, million USD green bond issuances in the month of January, and we got a very good rate. So we do good. I mean, it all depends on a particular at any particular point of time. What is the rate prevailing at that point of time, and whether it is beneficial to IRFC and to Minister of Railways.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sriram Prasad. Please go ahead. Ms. Prasad, your line is open. Could you please go ahead with your question? It would appear we have a technical difficulty with that line. We're going to lead with the next question from Aniruddha Arundhakar, who is an individual investor. Please go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, please note we have an technical difficulty with the line. Please hold. Mr. Arundhakar, my apologies. Could you please go ahead?
Will look into. Okay. So, what is the average cost of borrowing for IRFC and compared to this NBFC? And will IRFC looking for increase the margin for, let's say, 10 BPS?
Yeah.
Hello, sir. You are.
There's some echo going on.
My apologies, ladies and gentlemen, please hold.
Sorry, sir.
We do apologize for the echo on the line. One moment, please. My apologies, sir. Can you just repeat your question?
Okay. Sir, in short, I want to ask, will IRUC be looking into increasing the margin from right now 40 bps to 50 bps, considering it is raising funds at much lower rate compared to PFCs or REFs?
Yes, you see, the point is that we have represented to our parent ministry for raising the rates for the last 3 years. But you see, because of obvious reasons, because of financial constraints and in the wake of COVID, there has been some fiscal constraints. So they are a bit hard-pressed in raising the margin. They are actively considering it. But you must appreciate one thing, that it's, since it's a cost-plus kind of a business model, so there would be an inbuilt kind of a resistance to that from Government of India's side, because if, you know, they cannot... But they are... They are actively considering it. We have already represented as far as the increase in margin is concerned. And they have got their own reasons. The ministry has got their own reasons of not increasing it right now. But they are open to the idea.
Okay. Just another question. Is IRFC in the future will be going only focused to lending Ministry of Railway, or is companies looking to funding any other companies or private sector also?
Yes, we are looking for, towards diversifying our lending portfolio, and there are quite a few other entities that we are talking to. We are talking to other state governments also, like Government of Haryana has approached us for funding their infrastructure projects, and we are actively engaged with them. And similarly, we can lend for other projects also, other intra projects also, which has a backward and or forward linkage with Indian Railways. And we are open to funding the private sector also if it falls within our mandate. Definitely, we are open to diversifying our lending portfolio in the days to come. Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. And our next question then is from Sriram Prasad. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Am I audible this time? Hello.
Yes, yes, you're audible.
Hi, sir. Hi, good evening, sir, and congratulations on a good set of results.
Thank you.
Hello.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, my first question is with respect to the previous answer you gave with respect to funding private entities and state government entities, sir. How would you see the risk profile of IRFC changing when you fund private entities? And because right now, all the advantages we have as IRFC, the no NPAs, no risk-weighted assets because it is lending to the sovereign and all that is set to change, right? So why is it that we are interested in funding private and state government entities? Because the finances of state government entities in many states are not as robust as taking exposure to the central government. So my first question is with respect to what is your thought process on the same, and why is it that you are moving away, I wouldn't say moving away, but also looking at something which is slightly increasing the risk profile of IRFC's assets?
Yeah, that's a good question. You see, the point is, for any organization worth its salt, every organization does look forward to widening its scope of activity, number one. Only then it remains as a dynamic entity. Now, just limiting yourself to the sovereign is absolutely, I mean, it used to be at one point of time, but you need to grow. When you look at PFC, you look at REC, they have also, you know, diversified their portfolio, and they're doing very well for themselves. Now, here also, we are not veering away from funding the sovereign, but sovereign only should not be the aim, as we have got the ability to raise resources at a very competitive rate. And going forward, even if we go for funding the state government entities or the private sector entities with good balance sheets, with sound balance sheets, with sound track record behind them, and with the proper due diligence that is required for advancing the loans, if those are in place, I don't foresee any kind of a downgrade to our rating, number one. And number two is that also broadens our horizon. It broadens it increases the scope of increasing our of bettering our ratios, the financial ratios, and that would give a lot of spur to the development trajectory of the Indian Railway Finance Corporation. So I feel that diversification is the right way of pushing the organization beyond the boundaries that has been set right now. And you need to push the envelope when you grow, and when I think that this is the right time. The economy is growing. You should leverage on the opportunities that the infra sector in particular throws open to the financial institutions. And since we have got a better ability to raise finances for the infra sector, I feel that we should go ahead and diversify to beyond railways, if possible.
Sure, sir. My next question is slightly, I think there could be a difference of opinion, but I primarily see IRFC as an investment bank to the Ministry of Railways. I mean, instead of MSME borrowing, they use this vehicle that is in between and lend it. So why isn't IRFC trying to deleverage its balance sheet by, invitizing or securitizing and taking things off the balance sheet so that we are not hitting those leverage ratios consistently and free up a lot of capital to be redistributed as dividends or buybacks or support share price? Because, I mean, it's the same thing, right? It's easy to put these loans or project assets into InvITs, securitize them, and thereby reduce your balance sheet size and free up capital to be able to give more dividends or more buybacks and increase the share price. I primarily see IRFC as an investment bank and not necessarily as an NBFC. So are there any thoughts along those lines in order to deleverage the balance sheet?
You see, your suggestions are well taken. You have also sent us a mail, I suppose,
Yes.
a couple of days back. I had seen that mail. Yeah, that's right. Your suggestion is well taken. We have done securitization earlier also, and in fact, it is that we were the first entity to have done securitization of sovereign leases for this one.
Correct.
And we also agreed to the fact that securitization will also help improve the financial leverage, because it's off-balance sheet funding, and it will definitely boost our net worth on account of profit that would arise due because of interest rate differentials and all that. And but as far as InvITs are concerned, we don't have any physical assets, so we don't go for InvITs. There's no question of going for any InvITs, but securitization is definitely an option that we are actively considering. But having said that, I would just like to mention here that, you see, it's an instrument of fundraising, the securitization. So it does not offer any cost advantage to IRFC on account of this securitization. No, because basically financial institutions, they take resort to securitization when they've got various category of loans in their books. So you can't, in our case, it's a uniform kind of loan that we are giving to Ministry of Railways. So you can't really cherry-pick the loans or the receivables for the purpose of securitization for helping improve their rating and credit quality, which in turn will help us borrow at a cost lower than the cost at which we have borrowed through the conventional route. So it does not really benefit us as far as any from the point of view of cost angle. It doesn't give us any cost advantage. That's okay. But your primary point is taken. Yes, it will help in deleveraging, and we are actively considering this route also. It's not that we have not taken this route earlier, and now also we are taking this route, and we shall definitely consider this in times to come.
Sure, sir. And one ancillary question with respect to that. When the bank gives a loan to IRFC, what is the risk rate the bank carries on that loan? Is it zero or is it something else?
No, lending by... I would like Samantri to respond to that, please.
The Samantri this side. In fact, the banks used to assign a risk rate of 100%. Earlier, public financing institutions were given a constitutional risk weightage of 20%, but way back from 2006, in fact, RBI has made it uniform. Like for any NBFC, depending on the, for public financing institution, basically, the 100% risk weightage it will carry.
Sure. So if we are to securitize these assets to the very same banks who is giving us the loans, then there is a risk weight arbitrage for the banks as well, right? Because they carry the same exposure, but because it is sovereign exposure, they will get it zero risk weight. Is that correct, the way I'm understanding it?
Yes. Your understanding is correct. Definitely their CRAR will improve because that will carry a 0% risk weight. Definitely, because that will have a direct exposure to the sovereign. Okay.
Correct.
But at the same time, when banks invest in corporate securities, tradable securities, they go for held up trading kind of. They are not the category of investors who go for held to maturity kind of investment. So in this respect, even if they will have advantage in terms of improvement in their CRAR, they will be exposed to some kind of mark to market risk. That also has to be factored in.
Correct.
Second, also, you will accept the fact that when they are investing in my bonds and when they are investing in the pass-through certificate which underlies the securitization transactions, the PTCs are still to penetrate the Indian financial market. They are highly illiquid. So banks find it difficult, because in our past experience that I am telling you, no banks were taken for our pass-through certificate, PTC papers, in fact. So those insurance companies and others, they used to invest in those kind of, or some mutual funds. But when it comes to, because of this liquidity problem, as well as this mark-to-market risk, banks also, they are not that encouraged to invest. Even if they have an advantage in terms of CRAR.
Thank you, sir. The next question we have is from Sarvesh Gupta of Maxim Health Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Sir, one question is on your dividend policy. So I think, PSUs in general have this 5% of net worth or 30% of net income, whichever is higher. So, according to that, the dividends that you should give for this financial year may be around 2,000 odd crores. So are you going to adhere to that policy, or what's the thinking in terms of dividend for this financial year and for the coming years?
You see, last year we got a dispensation from DIPAM because we have to follow the DIPAM guidelines in this particular regard. So we got a dispensation from the clause of 5% of net worth. So we paid dividend at about 31%, which met with the other criterion of 30% of net income. I think we will adhere to that formula in this financial year also. It will be 30% of that, with the assumption that we shall get a dispensation from DIPAM in that regard in this financial year as well as in the coming years. We intend to stick to the 30% of that formula as far as dividend distribution is concerned.
Okay. And secondly, sir, in terms of the disbursement, so obviously this year is probably going to be much lower than last financial year. And maybe even in FY23, where we've seen budgetary outlay grow up by around 27-odd%,
yes.
So FY23 disbursement may also be lower than FY21. So what's the sort of the long-term trajectory here? in terms of how can we grow the disbursements? What can be the
Yes. So that is, taking the cue from the previous question, when it was being questioned that why should we go beyond Indian Railways in our lending portfolio. So this is the answer to that question, that in the future years probably the disbursement might. FY21 was a bit of an exceptional year because it was a huge financial constraint in that particular year. There was no economic activity. It was at its lowest ebb. So the GDP had contracted, and there was very, very low budgetary support for the infra creation in Indian Railways. Therefore, IRFC was the only resort available. Now with the GST collections and the economy back on track in the current financial year, thankfully, the government is in a better position fiscally speaking. And the government budgetary support for infra creation on Indian Railways is also quite healthy in the current financial year. And in the future, and in the coming financial year also in FY23, the budgetary allocation has gone up. And simultaneously, the capex target of Indian Railways has also gone up. But definitely, as has been rightly, stated by you, the disbursements by IRFC to Indian Railways will not touch the figure that we achieved in FY21. So that was almost a one-off kind of a thing. But with the kind of capex requirement of Indian Railways as per the Indian the infra plan of the government of India is concerned of 111 trillion rupees. To end of 2030, it's about 13 lakh crore that Minister of Railways plans to spend on capex. So with that kind of a capex growth in view and the National Rail Plan in place, NRP 2030, I think the kind of disbursements that IRFC would be making to Indian Railways will be maintained to about, say, at the level that we are in this financial year. Probably in the next financial year, it will be more than this year. And we plan to maintain that. But as rightly stated by you, we need to now diversify. And so we are looking at other avenues where we can we can finance other infra projects in the state government sector or in other private sector projects also, doing the proper due diligence of as far as loan disbursements are concerned. Since we have the net advantage of raising funds at very economical cost, at very competitive cost, we would like to leverage that to our advantage as far as diversification of lending portfolio is concerned.
Thank you, sir. Our next question is from Bharat Jain, who is a private investor. Please go ahead.
Very good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. I've been following IRFC and its business for last 1 year, and most of the questions which I had in mind have already been asked. One about raising capex, raising funds through REITs or InvITs, other on the growth and the dividend policy also. So most of the questions have already been asked, but still I would like to ask is, what is the kind of growth we see in the company for next 3 to 5 years, if we have a vision for that?
Yeah, I mean, we expect a very healthy growth as far as IRFC's disbursements are concerned to Indian Railways because of the National Rail Plan, which has already been tabled on Parliament earlier. And the organic growth of IRFC's portfolio would definitely be maintained. There is a sustainable growth lying ahead as far as IRFC's, AUM is concerned.
and definitely we are looking at a very healthy growth in the years to come. But yes, our orientation would be definitely to diversify our lending to beyond minister phases. That is the underlying thing that I would like to emphasize this in this particular call, that we are actively considering the opportunity to diversify our lending portfolio.
Okay, that's great. Look forward to the diversification, and thanks. Only suggestion again would be to look at improving the debt equity ratio by monetizing few of the assets as possible.
Yes, that point is well taken, and we are actively considering the aspect of securitization. We have done earlier also. But as has been just now pointed out, that you see, for securitization to happen, the bankers should also be coming forward. Now, the response of the bankers earlier was not that vibrant, primarily because of the illiquidity, as has been mentioned by my colleague earlier, that these PTCs are not that liquid. They're not so, you don't have the very liquid market of these pass-through certificates. So that is why the bankers were not that forthcoming as far as the securitization was concerned. But we shall definitely actively consider securitizing some of our lease receivables from Minister of Railways in the coming days to deleverage our balance sheet.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, due to our time constraints, the last question for today will be from Nikhil Gang from Aviva. Please go ahead. Nikhil, your line is open. You can ask your question.
Hello?
Yes,
hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
please go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to know what is the proportion of your book which has the dynamic lending rates, or the rates get changed every change in the repo rate, or is it all your lending book is at fixed rate of interest? And what is the duration of your lending book, if you can tell me?
As far as the flexible rates are concerned, in the domestic market, it's about 31% of the total portfolio borrowing mix that we have, which is having a variable rate. Bonds, which has got a fixed rate, is 46%. In the ECB portion also, we have a substantial portion which is through the variable rates, that is the syndicated loans. So about, say, for instance, 40% would be variable and the rest of it would be fixed. I mean, just back of the envelope calculation kind of a thing that is there. And what was your second question?
Is it also in variable rate?
Which one?
Lending. You're lending, sir.
No, lending is also absolutely. Lending is also variable rate.
So, what proportion of your book is at lending? Variable
rate? The entire portfolio is, I mean, about 98%.
Okay.
More than 98%. Even the RBNL portion is also having it is cost plus model. So, fluctuation is there in the rate, they're all passed through to Minister of Railways.
Okay, so that's why banking route is more preferable to us.
Okay. Yes.
We don't want to carry the risk of that fall on the rise. Okay, sir, I got your point, sir. Sir, what is the duration of your lending book, sir? If it's on lending, it's on variable.
10 to 15 years.
10 to 15 years, typically. Okay, sir.
Typically, yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much for taking my question, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Then that was today's last question, and I would now like to turn the conference back to Mr. Pritesh Bhan for closing comments.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for giving us opportunity. Thank you all the participants for joining it. Stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of DAM Capital Advisors Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.